WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. If you're taking your kids to the movies this weekend, you'll probably hear this song.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me. My lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere.
This version by Robbie Williams was done for the closing credits of the Pixar film Finding Nemo. Beyond the Sea is also featured in the sequel, Finding Dory, which our film critic David Edelstein will review in a few minutes. It's been recorded by many singers, but the most popular version is the 1959 hit by Bobby Darin. We thought we'd spend a few minutes hearing about Darin from the late Nick Vinay, who was Darin's close friend and producer. Here's an excerpt of the interview Terry Gross recorded with Vinay in 1996.
How did you meet Bobby Darin?
We were both in our teens, I guess, and we were working at the Brill Building in New York. The Brill Building was the music mecca of pop music, I guess, at that time. And it was centrally located, and we met a lot of people, like Burt Bacharach had an office there, Lee Bernstoler had an office there, and Darin and I rented a broom closet and converted it into an office. And we just wanted a place to put our names on the door. And he wrote songs, and I tried to put records together. The word producer was not being used at that time. And we actually met in the elevator at the Brill Building and several times, and we ate in the same restaurant around the corner. And we just became friends, and a group of us, really. And we started hanging out and using the broom closet as a place to meet. And we kept a piano in there and a place to write and play demos.
Now, I want to play the demo of another early hit that he had, Dream Lover. And, wow, this demo's great. His singing on it is so good, and it's much more stripped down. It's very stripped down, so it's different from the very produced hit recording of the song. Now, tell me the story behind this demo.
Well, he felt that if the song didn't make it with people, if they really didn't get the message with just him and a guitar. By the way, the guitarist is Fred Neil. At that time, Fred had written a song called Candyman for Roy Orbison, and he also wote Everybody's Talking for the Schlesinger film Midnight Cowboy. He wanted to try something which wasn't being done at that time. Everything was very, and in that period of time, everything was cute and pretty. And he wanted to do something that was not cute, not pretty, but worked on another level. And he made the demo at the session with just Fred playing the guitar. And then later on, everybody asked him to add more, and he did, and he went on. And, of course, it was a hit. Either version will make it for me, too. But that version's real special because it's just Bobby and the guitar, and he sings it as well as he sang anything else.
Dream Lover, take five.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way. A girl to hold in my arms and know the magic of her charms. Cause I need a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone.
Although he started off with rock and roll hits, he seemed to know early on that he wanted to sing standards and probably end up in Vegas. Now, a lot of rock and rollers in the late 50s and early 60s were groomed to play Vegas, but often against their will. But the feeling was rock and roll is a fad, and unless you learn how to play Vegas, you'll be out of a career by the time you're in your 20s.
Well, you're correct.
Go ahead.
That particular time period, you know, we were still coming out of the late 40s. The influence in the 50s was from the adults in the late 40s. And singing was legitimate. and you had to play in a club, and you had to play Vegas, and those venues, or you weren't a success. And if you didn't learn to play those places, you would end up doing one-nighters with 20 other acts that had one hit on various disc jockey shows in small towns. And a lot of the rock and rollers could not do the pop situation, and a lot of them could. And the transition was tough for some. There was Paul Anka who made the transition, and it was very few of them, really. And Darren made the great transition.
For, you know, for a lot of people in rock and roll, listeners and performers, Vegas symbolized everything that was square and unsavory about show business. Why did Bobby Darin want that?
Well, Darin thought that he could actually bridge the gap and bring his audience, and the word teenagers is the word they use, people under the age of 25, he could actually bring them up to where they too would appreciate Sinatra. They'd appreciate Tony Bennett. They'd appreciate pop music. And he tried to cross it. He tried to keep the rhythm and the tempo for dancing situations and for the excitement. And later on, when you get into Mac the Knife, you'll see he did it.
Well, let's hear. Mac the Knife is recorded by Bobby Darin in late 1958.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear. And it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe. And it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe. Scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though. Where's old Maggie Heath, babe? So there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. Eek! And someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag is just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight, dear. Five will get you ten, old Mackie's back in town. Don't you hear about Louis Miller?
He died of a heart condition. How long was he aware that he had a heart condition? Did he always know that?
Yes, he did. He knew that from when he was a small kid, when he was in his when he was 8 or 9 years old, he understood that. He also understood he wasn't going to make it to 21. And then the new diagnosis said 30. We're the exact age, and he passed away at 36, 37. He outlived the sentences they gave him of how long he was going to live, but he also knew that he had pressed his luck. We did a lot of gambling. We loved Las Vegas, and he used to say, "I'm playing it like it lays." Towards the end there, he used to say, "Boy, I'm pressing my luck, but I'm going to double up," and that was his phrase all the time. He said, "We'll go in the studio. I'm going to double up and see if I can do an album while I still have the energy." He was wearing down towards the end.
I'd like to close with a song, and I'm going to let you pick this one. I'd like you to pick and to introduce a song that you particularly love or that has special significance for you.
I'd like to play Beyond the Sea.
And why do you want to choose this?
Darin would go up to Pfeiffer Beach all the time and Big Sur. And that's where he did his best thinking towards the end. And he would whistle Beyond the Sea on the beach. And I'd walk, a quarter of a mile behind him because he wanted me to see how the sound sounded when the wind brought it back. He was still planning on recording a new version of Beyond the Sea at Pfeiffer Beach. It just means a lot.
Our interview with Nick Vinay was recorded in 1996. Vinay died in 1998. He was 61.